The Sports Interview with Anne Liguori podcast is brought to you by iBeCool Luxury Athleisure Wear for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive ice-fill cooling technology, along with SPF 50 plus sun protection. Look your best. Protect your skin. Visit ibkul.com to learn more. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Mark Berman, tour director, producer of the East Coast Women's Pro Tour. Mark, so glad to have you on the show.
So glad to be here. Thank you. I've been stalking you forever trying to get on the show, so I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
I can't believe what success the East Coast Women's Pro Tour has had in such a short period of time. Tell me about the history. I know your first tournament just really started in January 2022.
It did. Yeah, we bought a older tour that was just not doing very well, as sometimes those things happen. And we bought this tour. I think we closed on it December 20th, shot ourselves out of a cannon. Here we are 105 days later. We've had 5 tournaments already in our winter series. We've got 2 left. We've had 138 different players. We've awarded $150,000 in prizes so far, including 5 $10,000 first place checks. We've had 4 first time winners. I could probably get all the way down to 3,884 rounds of golf. I could keep going. It was a fast start. And again, it was, you know, we talked about it a little earlier. It was a conversation I had with a bunch of women players at a tournament we ran in October. And our mission has always been, for the 2 or 3 years we've been kind of working on creating women's events, is creating playing opportunities for women. That first event was really just trying to extend their season by a couple of weeks, because their season ends in September, and we're trying to create jobs for them in October and so on. And that turned into a winter series that has now blossomed into a full tour, getting ready to launch the summer schedule.
And so the East Coast Women's Pro Tour, just so the listeners understand, it's a new developmental circuit for women. It's actually a mini tour, you say, kind of perhaps just one level down from the Epson Tour, which used to be the Symetra Tour, which feeds into the LPGA Tour.
Correct. Correct. So yeah, couldn't have done it better. So LPGA Tour, Epson Tour, and then there's 3 tours at our level. You know, we always in the industry call them mini tours. We're trying to get away from that vernacular, talk about them being developmental tours, because I've become fond of saying the only thing mini about these tours are the purses, and we're trying to change that too. But yeah, they're developmental tours. There's only 3 in the country for women. There's about 30 for men. Men can make, you know, $50,000, $80,000, $150,000 a year. And the number one player on one of the tours last year, she made $23,000, which means she lost 50 or lost 30. So we're trying to create better opportunities, different pathways, more ways to keep women playing professionally. And that's where we are.
And Mark, what's your motivation for doing this?
You know, it all comes, I think when you jump into something like this, it's always personal. And my motivation was really being inside the ropes with my daughter, who turned professional in 2020, started her playing career when she was 9 years old, back in 2007-ish. And having gone through all of those processes, and having going through that whole continuum of golf, through junior golf and high school golf, college golf, amateur golf, and you get to professional golf, and she graduated college, decided she wanted to turn pro, and suddenly you realize just how little opportunity there is for these women to get to the LPGA. And, you know, there's a lot of women coming out of college. There's a lot of players that are trying to turn professionally or trying to turn professional. They've had this dream. They've been given this dream since they were young. And then you get out, and where do you play? How do I get there? And it was a little bit out of that necessity of saying, all right, we're going to create more opportunities for these women to play. We're going to create, you know, we can't get them quite the purses yet. We're working on it to really get out there, earn a living, but we're going to at least create more seats at the table and create more opportunities. And that's really been the motivation. It's, you know, I'm just a golf dad who loves the game, who grew up inside the ropes with my kid and her friends, and just trying to create more opportunities for them.
Well, I have to tell you, the men who had the most impact on my professional sports broadcasting career were men who have daughters. So being a sports dad to a daughter is so important because you actually experience the lack of opportunity. In my case, sports broadcasting. In your daughter's case, professional golf.
Right, exactly. And you do see that. And I think I've had the luxury, the honor. I mean, it's been a privilege to walk beside her for her 13-year career so far. And seeing, obviously, all the wonderful opportunities. I mean, I credit this game for making her who she is and for giving us the opportunity to spend all this time together. At the same time, you get to see kind of the things that aren't happening for women and the things that are different between boys and then young men and then men in women's golf. And that was the gap we're trying to fill, right? And again, just trying to create more opportunities for them and create it on a level that honors them, respects them, makes them feel like professional athletes. And we're not just sticking a sign in the ground and saying, okay, here's a place for you to play. We're creating as much as we can as an elevated professional sport and professional feel. When you walk onto our grounds for a tournament, you know there's a tournament going on, right? There's tents and there's signage and there's fans and, you know, there's people watching these women. And, you know, at our first event, there might've been 50, 100 people. And some of the girls would come up to me and we'd never played in front of this many people. And it's amazing. We'll go back next year and there'll be five times that many, right? We have, you know, our volunteers wear the same shirts and our, you know, it feels like a professional event, and that's what these women deserve. They've worked hard for a long time.
So tell me about your daughter and her professional golf career. How's she doing?
Well, she started out, you know, she's one of the COVID kids, right? So she graduated in 2020.
Unfortunately, where'd she go?
She went to Jacksonville University and played there. She was the 245th ranked amateur, something around there when she graduated, going into her senior spring where she, you know, hopefully would have elevated into that top 200. And then COVID hit and suddenly senior spring is wiped out. And the whole cadence of what happens next, right? Like you graduate college, you play the mini tours for a few months, you get as much training as you can, you go to Q school is canceled. So then what happens? And this kind of became part of our narrative for our tournament as well, or our tour as well. So she goes out and plays on WAPT, which is great. Unfortunately, because the LPGA and the Epson, or then Symetra Tour, were both closed, all of the higher level players, all the LPGA players, or a lot of the LPGA players, were now playing down at the mini tour level and frankly winning these events, right? So you've got these girls who are out there trying to play for their $400 or $500, and then you've got LPGA Bonafide Solheim Cup players out there winning, you know, kind of smaller checks. And it was a little bit, I don't know what the word was, right? I can't really articulate the feeling, but it just felt awkward, I guess. So when we started our tour, we made a very definitive rule to not allow LPGA card-carrying members on our tour. Our tour is for developing players. Their job is to get to LPGA status. And while it's fun and interesting and a lot of things to learn for these young women by probably playing with LPGA players, they know enough. And now it's play against your peers, play against the level where you're supposed to play, right? Like you wouldn't put a single A, double A baseball player in against an all-star major league player, right? So we're trying to give them those stepping stones and help them develop their confidence and their game so they can get to that level. So we actually had, I don't know, 15 or 20 LPGA players this winter try to sign up for our tour, and we gently asked them not to play. And what was nice about it, Anne, is they all completely agreed. They thanked me for creating opportunities. They understood. And we parted as friends, and there were some pretty big names. So it was fun having those conversations, and it was fun kind of getting the validation that, you know what, maybe this isn't such a bad idea.
Wow. So LPGA tour players who wanted to play in the East Coast Women's Pro Tour, and you said, nope, if you've played on the LPGA tour, that's your level and you can't play in this tour.
Yeah. It's more current card carrying members. So if you no longer have your card, right? Like again, it's like that AAA baseball level. So now you got players that are not only trying to get there, but players that are trying to get back. And we make exceptions for women coming back from maternity or from injury, because this is their place to, you know, to knock off the rust and get their reps. But for the most part, this is a place for the developmental player to come out and get better and work their way forward.
And from what I understand, it's very hard even to get into the Epson Tour, which was once the Symetra Tour, which then feeds into the LPGA Tour. So how tough is it to get into the East Coast Women's Pro Tour?
Well, right now it's pretty easy. You know, okay. we're just starting. It's great. What we're going to see, and there was a great article in Bloomberg a couple of days ago. And what we're seeing, obviously, is an explosion of women, of women's golf. That explosion comes a little bit from COVID, but this explosion is also coming from 10, 12, 15 years ago when the golf industry said, we've got to create more players. We got to start them younger. And they started focusing on juniors, boys and girls. So now, you know, my daughter was the product of that generation, call it the Tiger generation. But my daughter is one of many who were in that high school year of 2014 and onward that are now graduating college. So you're seeing hundreds of girls, you know, a couple of years ago, 8 years ago, there were maybe 100 girls that thought they were good enough to play professional golf, right? Now you've got 700-800 that are coming out. This year, you've got a double graduating class because of COVID. So there's only so many places to put them. And again, we're one of those three places to put them. And we've got some room because we're a new tour. So right now, these tours are very much sign up and go, which is great. I don't want there to be barriers of entry. A year from now, maybe we're having a different conversation where we've got wait lists and more tournaments. But you know, right now, yeah, it should be easy to play golf at this level. I mean, and this is a high level, don't get me wrong, but it should be available, and that's what it is. And then that next step, the Epson Tour, you know, again, they're just like Korn Ferry and PGA Tour. They're this much, you know, this far away from getting to that next level. Unfortunately, there's a lot of them now.
I know there's statistics that prove that more and more women are playing golf and more women are trying to turn pro and are good enough to go the professional route. And I can just tell just by being on the driving range down in Florida and when I'm back home on the east end of Long Island, so many young junior golfers that are so good that just didn't exist, say, 10, 15 years ago. Yep. I remember a golf scholarships used to go unused for women. And that can't be the case now. You probably have more stats, current stats on that than anybody. But there are just so many strong female players. It just blows me away.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to see. The stat of there are 10% college scholarships going unused is about a 10-year-old stat. I love it when people, you know, we do a lot of counseling with and coaching, whatever the word is, with parents of junior golfers and parents of young professionals. It's funny. I was in a gym in a hotel over Thanksgiving, and there's this guy from Pennsylvania telling me how his daughter's, you know, she's going to be a scholarship player. And we're talking about her. Where are you from? I'm from New York. Great. She's going to be a scholarship player because, you know, so many golf scholarships go unused. And we started talking about scoring, which is the last thing I care about. But we started talking about scoring. And he's like, yeah, she should be breaking 90 soon. I'm like, you're probably not going to get that scholarship.
What planet is he on?
Yeah, and that might have been true 10, 15 years ago, but it is not true now. I mean, these girls are so good. They put so much time into their game. They're so dedicated. You know, I'm fortunate that I've been with my daughter through this process and all of her friends, and they're all the same. They're just so good. But the nice thing is when they're off the golf course, they shut it off, and then they're just girls again. And I even see that at the professional level. The best conversations I hear are about fashion and shoes and, you know, what band you're listening to and that kind of stuff. So it's things I never thought I'd be part of. It's really
cool. You must be the coolest, most knowledgeable dad on the planet when it comes to young women, right? So talk about this schedule. What's upcoming? I know you had a bunch of events from January through March. What's coming up?
Yep. So we've got our two. So we started with a winter series. And again, that was just a reaction to the girls saying, we need something to do. We need a way to make a living between October and March. And this was already January. So we had a 7-tournament winter series. We've got two events left. We've got both of them coming up in Orlando. Then we'll take a few weeks off. And, you know, now you're at the point in time where the Cactus Tour out in Arizona is at full throttle. The WAPT in Texas is full throttle. The Epson Tour is full throttle. We're actually taking a little bit of a back seat because we don't want to conflict with those tours, right? We're not in the business of having these girls make choices. We want to give them more opportunities. So we're going to be off until the beginning of May, and we'll launch in Sebring, Florida at the Sun and Lakes Golf Course, which is the home of the Harder Hall Women's Amateur. So a cool bit of history there. And we positioned it purposely right after the three women's US Open qualifiers. So we've got 150, 200 and whatever 78 times three is, that many professional golfers and aspiring professional golfers right there in our backyard. So we're gonna start there. We've got one TBD coming up in either Florida or Northern New Jersey. And then we go to Connecticut and New Hampshire. And then we come back down into Atlanta, South Carolina. We're actually running a couple events out in California, our Q school prep series events for the girls to get ready for Q school. So again,
with the exception of California, it certainly sounds like the East Coast Women's Pro Tour. You might have to change that name if you're going to.
Those are kind of our off schedule events. They're almost services, right? To give these girls reps on those courses. And we're literally the week before the Q school courses. So it's kind of cool. Our goal with the East Coast is very definitive in creating this lane on the East Coast of the United States, because up until now, all of these women had to go to Texas, had to go to Arizona. You can't really afford to go out on the road for 6, 8, 10 weeks at a time as a woman. You can as a guy. So you got to go home and you got to wait tables and you got to work in pro shops and you got to make your 3-4 grand. So unfortunately, you go out and not win it back. So our mission was to create an East Coast marketplace for these women to go to work and reduce their travel costs. So maybe they can make a living. Maybe they can play a little bit more. And again, hone their games, hone their skills, continue to develop so they can get to the next level.
And Mark, I know you had a huge story that got a lot of attention with the 18-year-old amateur who conceded a playoff so that her friend, a young professional, could collect the $10,000 winner's check. What a great story that was.
Yeah, I'm afraid of tearing up when you bring that one up. It was really cool, right? You got this amateur, Kennedy Adams, who was a commit to Alabama, tremendous young lady, tremendous player. Obviously, shoots a 66, 68 in the final round to force a playoff against Teresa Warner who played at Arizona. And it was Teresa's fifth event. She's only played our events, right, coming out of college, because that's all there was to play. And Teresa was kind of she was leading the second round. They were tied going into nine, and then they were tied all the way through. We get to the 18th green. Hugs, looks like a typical dad player conversation. And Kennedy walks over and says, "I'm going to concede the playoff," which was obviously a showstopper. Never heard of that before. And her logic was very straightforward. There was no deliberation. It wasn't should I, shouldn't I. It was a very straightforward, you know what? I'm going to Alabama. I'm an amateur. I can win $1,000. It's going to mean very little to me at this point. $10,000 to a new professional. And apparently Therese has quite an interesting story that I don't know about, but apparently, and $10,000 is a lot to anybody, right? But particularly this level of professional. So she basically walked away from the championship and said, you know what, you take this. And tears ensued for everybody, hugs. And it became a really cool story. And it's what I love about women's golf. And I don't know that this doesn't happen on men's golf, but I've never heard of it. I've never heard it at any level. We had a gentleman at the PXG Women's Championship, Match Play Championship last year, who came out, had never seen a single stroke of women's golf, had never seen a single shot, had played in 30, 40, 50 pro-ams for men, walked off the course, came up to me and said, you know what, I want to put 10 grand into the purse for these young women. And those are the stories that I like to tell, right? Our mission is shining a light on women's golf, right? We can talk about red numbers all day. These players are all awesome. They're all going to shoot in the 60s. They're all going to shoot in the low 70s. But it's these kind of stories that I think people need to hear and see when they realize just what kind of character is out there and how good these players are and these young women are.
Well, I'm all for giving women more opportunities, and particularly female athletes, and continued success, Mark. I think what you're doing is just wonderful. And I know it's just going to grow upward, and I'll be following you, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. Mark Berman, tour director and producer of East Coast Women's Pro Tour. Thanks so much for being on Sports Interview.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. The Sports Interview with Ann Liguori podcast was brought to you by IB Cole Luxury Athleisure Wear for Men and Women, featuring the exclusive Iceville cooling technology along with SPF 50+ sun protection. Look your best. Protect your skin. Visit ibkol.com to learn more.